Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hello and welcome to episode 24 of Shifting the Paradigm. I'm Christina Gomez, your hostess for this next hour of adventure and UFO shenanigans, where we look and think outside the proverbial box, jump down rabbit holes, and where the red pill is actually a red tic tac. I want to say hi to everyone in the live chat and all my moderators, Zenza, Bill, Jamie, Edward. Thank you so much for the super sticker. Awesome. We got Moose, Dub. Oh, how is everyone doing today? I am really excited to welcome my friend and fellow teammate at The Debrief, Canada-based PR professional, UFO researcher, and podcaster, Chrissy Newton. By day, she's an owner of Vocab Communications and an award-winning PR professional with a knack for getting people talking. And by night, she co-hosts a podcast called Alt Pop Repeat, where she syncs counterculture and subculture with pop culture trends and movements. The show can be found on all major streaming platforms or on Dash Radio's Dash Talk X in Los Angeles. When she's not co-hosting her own podcast, you can find Chrissy creating and hosting tech, science, defense, and UFO-themed show called Rebelliously Curious with Chrissy Newton on the Debrief YouTube channel and website, along with being a partner and director of media and PR for the Debrief. With all that being said, let's bring in our extra special guest, Miss Chrissy Newton. Hey, Chrissy.
Hi, how are you?
I am so stoked for today. I'm really excited to have you on and talk about all the things that we love talking about.
It is. We're like a mesh of, this is like the mesh of the families coming together finally. Like, yay. When you're like, do you want to do the show? I'm like, 100%. Like, they're our family. Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, being a part of the Debrief family is so much fun. I love all of our teammates there, and they're just something else.
Me too.
Chrissy, you know, you wear a lot of hats with your work by day and the work you do for the Debrief and producing videos. And, you know, to top it all off, you have your keen eye on the Canadian UFO situation. How do you do it? And what got you started in being interested in UFOs?
Well, UFOs, I'm going to say, is like, it's my dad's jam. And my dad got me into that to become my jam. And a lot of people, if they've watched this, have heard my story, know that it comes from my dad. So my dad had a sighting in when he was 18. I think he was like around 18, 19, 20. And he was driving up north with a group of people. And he had a UFO experience. And then from there, he took a picture of it. And then from there, he was always curious and asking questions and always wondered what happened to him. So, and like, what it was. So after that, then when I grew up, my dad would show me, he showed me the picture. And like, I just like it, I always say like it lit everything inside of me. Cause I was like, what is this? And then from there, we'd watch documentaries together. We'd do research together. And then we started going to conferences. And then that's where, you know, I started meeting a lot of different people in the community and doing my own work. And then going to do a crop circle travel trip and stuff like that with Gary King in England. And it all just kind of went from there. So it's funny because Canadians don't talk about UFOs as much as Americans, and which is fine. But I always found myself playing in the American field and not the Canadian. But I do know a lot of people in the Canadian world. You know, I was really fortunate to know Paul Hellyer, who passed away recently. Amazing man. Victor Vigiani was his right-hand man. And Victor was really the one that pushed me forward into the community more. So, you know, and I've been meeting so many more now, Canadians just in general all over the world, and mainly a lot in BC and in Ontario. But it's nice to have that we have our own community growing here too.
And, you know, there are quite a few interesting UFO cases in Canada. And, you know, we're going to get a little bit more into depth on that, because that's a big reason to why you're here, is hearing what Canada has to say about UFOs. But, yeah. You know, you're not only a vital part of the media machine that is The Debrief, but you also co-host the show Alt Pop Repeat. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, for sure. It's actually connected to the UFO world, ufology. And Marie will know this. If Marie, you're watching too, she'll laugh, because she was part of this journey of me now working with The Debrief. So what happened was, 2 years ago, a friend and I started a podcast called Alt Pop Repeat. And it talks about how countercultures turn into mainstream pop culture. And so we live, like right now, what we're doing is a counterculture thing. Ufology is counterculture, you know, that's slowly becoming mainstream. So what Marie and I do is document those catalyst moments throughout the years. It could be, you know, cannabis, psilocybin, it could be LGBTQ rights. It could be even civil rights was part of that, you know, women's liberation part of that too. So ufology is one of those topics. And for our first episode, we interviewed Jeremy Corbell. And I met Jeremy a couple of years ago previously at a conference while he was, you know, researching and doing his doc for Bob Lazar doc. And so Marie and I then went to LA, you know, recorded with some other people as well. But Jeremy was our first episode, which was funny, because I always say to Marie now, I go, who would have thought when we started this show that I would, you know, I'd love ufology and in the counterculture, but then we're actually talking about being in countercultures, and I find myself like now like fully immersed into one. So it's funny. Things come full circle. You know,
yeah, absolutely. And especially when you're starting, and interviewing a big name is fantastic. And I just recently did a show about Bob Lazar, and it was a very heated conversation, and like reading all the comments, you're either really one side or the other, which is insane. And Bob Lazar is such a good topic to touch on. I would like to say thank you so much to Deranged Lunatic for the super sticker, Akashi Chris. Thank you. And Laura, all of you guys are amazing. You have no idea what you're doing to support this channel. And maybe I'll be telling you in the future where it's all going. So now the topics of UFOs has been covered in the mainstream media took a major turn at the beginning of the year and to the run up to the release of the preliminary government UAP report in June, you know, especially in the United States. Did it receive similar coverage in Canada? Because, you know, in May, it was almost a daily feature on several network news shows in the States.
Yeah, that's a good question. It didn't. It took, so when we even broke a story too, like The Debrief did, it took about 2 weeks. And I was even seeding press releases to Canadian media about this as well. So they knew the stories were breaking and they knew what was happening, but they took them about 2 weeks to catch up. And even with, you know, they interviewed Jeremy, I saw that. They did some stuff with Lou Elizondo, I believe, with CBC, but it took a long time for journalists to, I think, to wrap their heads around this, and then also find those key players, because Canadian media doesn't follow it as much. You know, Vice has like MJ Banias and other people that are Canadian, like MJ's from Winnipeg. He wrote for Vice previously on these kind of topics. And then, you know, there's only a few media members that really write about it because it's not really talked about, unfortunately, but it's starting to now because we have more people asking questions and there's way more UFO sightings in Canada now than there's ever been. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's insane how many sightings Canada's having right now. Why do you think it took them a while to kind of get on the bandwagon?
So I think early in, like, obviously the Cold War conversation that we had, you know, with disinformation, we had something similar in Canada where we were researching UFOs because of Roswell. It started in the early 1950s and then it just kind of stopped after Roswell, and then people during the Cold War, we had the same fears in Canada as the States did. So what we did was take it seriously for a little bit. And then after that, we just just stopped really researching it. Like, there's certain researchers for sure in the field, but when it comes to government and everything else, no, they just stopped looking at it. And we don't even call UFOs UAPs here. We still call them UFOs, which I'm like, come on, guys, like, pick up with the vernacular. Come on. Like, it's so yeah,
get with the program.
So it just stopped after a while. They just was discredited, just the way the states was. It happens in Canada. You know, we are a sister country. So a lot of things that happen to you guys will, you know, will come up our way, and we'll look at it seriously, or we won't, depending on what you guys do as well. You know,
interesting.
Yeah.
John, thank you so much for the super sticker. That's awesome. And Chrissy, did you become aware of an increase in public interest and perception about the UFO topic during those months after the preliminary report?
Well, actually, it was more before the preliminary report. So the report, like, obviously people in media talked about it, but before that, it was during COVID. There was a spike of UFO sightings that happened during COVID. And we know that majority of people were probably, they're obviously staying at home. They're looking in the skies more. They're in their backyards. They have way more time. We have better technology. So there was an increase. And they say that, I think it's like one in three Canadians have seen a UFO or see UFOs or report UFOs.
That's a big stat.
It is. Yeah. It's a lot. Like, our population's not that big compared to you guys. we did have an increase, and then we've had more increased sightings, and pilots have had increased sightings too. There was a WestJet sighting earlier, I believe this year. I think it was in May, if I'm right. And people are actually talking about it, reporting it, but we've had multiple UFO cases that are unbelievably amazing. And the stories are unbelievable. We also have our own Roswell as well. So
can you talk about that just a little bit?
Yeah. We have Shang Harbor. I can't remember the date now for Shang Harbor, but Shang Harbor was an incident that happened within Nova Scotia, and a massive craft, which now is a conversation I've had in other podcasts, if it was actually a USO or it was a UAP. So some people are like, I'm like, I don't know, maybe it was a USO. So I'll explain. It happened when, what happened was, there was a group of people that saw a UFO in the sky, and they were driving towards it, looking at it. And from what I know, it crashed into the water. When they went into the forest, they saw this craft in the water on top, which they think it crashed. And there was like this yellowy green foam that was on top of it. So the RCMP was called in, American Navy, I believe, was called in as well too. So we were working together. They were diving to see what this crashed object was, and then they never found anything. So we compare it as our Canadian Roswell. Yeah.
And with these kinds of stories, and you mentioning that even pilots in Canada are having their own UAP sightings, how about the civilian push for the Canadian government to have transparency about the UFO mystery? I mean, have you noticed if it's become a thing in Canada the way it has become in the United States and in the UK?
In our community, for sure. There is, because there's conferences that are hosted. There's like Alien Con, you know, Victor Vigiani hosted an amazing conference with a group of people at the University of Toronto years ago. So we have them, and we have things happening, but it's in our community. Outside of that, no, we don't see things like the big home phone. Like, I wish we had that, you know, and maybe one day we will, but we've recently pushed the Canadian government to have a conversation about it, but they're saying like, yeah, well, we'll document it, but we're really not taking it seriously. I know. I'm like, come on, guys. I'm like, but I will say one thing is that I do think that there is political conversations happening. They're just not happening with us. And they are happening inside. 100% they have to be. We've had too many instances. And also, like I've said this a couple times, we have three commemorative coins from the Canadian Mint that have three, that have UFO incidences on them, like acts, like, yeah. So like, yeah, I know, it's crazy. We have a recently one that just sold out now that has the Montreal incident that happened in 1990. Yeah, and has a UFO on it. And then we have another toonie, I believe it's a toonie, that has the Shang Harbor. Yeah, it's like two kids and like kids in front of a UFO. It's like crashing into the water. Like, it's really cool. So come on, if our Canadian Mint is making UFO, we're probably having other conversations within government that are just not public yet. Maybe one day.
I definitely hope so. They got to go with the program, just like with the United States. They gotta catch up.
Yeah.
And, you know, talking about the 1990 UFO sighting in Montreal, for those that might not know about it, you know, this encounter was about for 3 hours and it had numerous witnesses. Can you just kind of give us a brief overview of the sighting, which caused a media sensation at the time?
Yeah, for sure. So a woman was swimming in her pool, in a pool in a hotel in Montreal downtown, and she saw this light in the sky and she didn't know what it was. So she ended up calling people to look at it. And there was multiple people that saw this sighting. The same thing happened. The La Presse came in, which was is a newspaper at the time, a really, really substantial, important newspaper, still is to this date in Montreal and Quebec. So a journalist came to this incident along with then the RCMP, and they were looking at this. I believe it stayed in the sky for about 15 minutes from what people were seeing. Yeah. And they videotaped it, but it had like this hues of different colors and it was mainly yellow around. And I think there was some red as well. So what happened in that incident though, is when they reported it and people were like, no, like I saw a craft, like it was a craft of some sort. And then what happened was, is we had some environmentalists come forward a couple of days after and said that it was the Aurora Borealis. It was the Northern Lights, which totally could be possible. Like it's not far out of reach, because in the Aurora Borealis, you have like, there are different ways that patterns are made. And one of them is similar, where you have like lights coming off and then a central beaming light in the middle. It's totally possible. But from what these people saw, they said they saw a craft and it wasn't Aurora Borealis. And during that time, I will say in the 1990s, there was more common to have the Aurora Borealis happen closer to us, because I've seen it as a kid as well. And I live in Ontario. It usually happens more northern, but by around the 1990s, it was colder and it was happening more. So it's possible, but you know, a lot of people saw it and the RCMP looked into it too at some point, but they've never been able to prove if it was Aurora Borealis or if it was actually a craft. So crazy.
I've never seen an Aurora Borealis before. On average, how long do you think these lights are seen?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say a fair amount, depending on where you are. So when and the thing is, like, that happens centrally, right? And so with Aurora Borealis, it happens throughout the entire sky. So I've had one time when I was, God, I must have been like 6. My dad woke me up at like 3 a.m. or something ridiculous. And he's like, get out of bed. And I'm like, what?
The witch's hour.
I know. He's like, get out of bed. I don't know what he's doing. It might have been midnight too. But for me, it felt like it was super late. And he's like, get out of bed, get out of bed. And he's like, I got to show you something. And it was like there was snow all over the ground. And we went on the back deck and he like pointed up and he was like, look, he's like, that's Aurora Borealis. And it was beautiful. Like it was just, the sky was lit up from like literally like almost daylight, like from top to bottom, like in green, red, yellow, purple, like it was crazy. And when I'm younger, that happened more because it was colder and probably due to climate change, obviously, like, you know, it's getting warmer. So you don't really see it. I've seen Aurora Borealis about like 3 or 4 times, but I've only seen it fill the entire sky. I've never actually seen it do a central like light kind of thing. And I would think that's a UFO too, if I saw it, but I don't know how common that is. Cause I know for us, it's not really even talked about as something that it could possibly be. So I don't know. They put it on
insane,
a coin,
right? There you go. That just leads me to more questions that I don't know if we'll be able to ask them today, but for these environmental scientists to say that this sighting was possibly an Aurora Borealis, it just makes me question the questions I asked you. Well, how long does it last for? And is it normal to be only 15 minutes long or 3 hours long, whatever people were saying?
I think it can last a long time. Like, I think it could I've seen it last like hours. So it's, you know, if it's in a, I don't know if it's in a central area, but I've never seen Aurora Borealis only last for 15 minutes. But again, I'm not an environmentalist or work with it in that field, right? So.
No, me neither. I mean, I took environmental science like my senior year in high school, and that's as far as it's going to go. But we didn't learn anything about that.
Fair enough.
For those that are interested about knowing more about this specific case and others that we will be discussing, I will place the links in the description box below. Now, Jamie, thank you. It says, Chrissy, have you ever had a UFO experience of your own? Good
question. Yeah, yeah. I say it's a UAP, but I don't know 100%. I was with my ex-boyfriend at the time. We were at his house and it was a backyard UFO sighting. And what happened was, is we were outside, we were having a drink, we were talking. I always say this to people, I think you have to preface if you're having alcohol when you're having sightings. Like, I'm not even joking. I think it's like, you really do, or people are doing other things, you know, I'm like, you have to preface. Like, so I say that, like, we weren't drunk. I was having a Corona. and so we were chatting and we were talking and I was like, I'm always looking up. Like, he knows that I'm like at night, you know, like all of us UFO people generally are. So this was during the day though. And I was in the backyard with him and I looked to my left at that point. And I'm like, what is that? And he's like, what? So it was a fireball and like this in the end, and it had like a streak, but it was like a slow streak. So you know, when you see an exhaust that's burning off a plane, like the afterburn,
yeah,
it was something like that, but it was really small and it was like bright, like a ball. And it was moving so slow across the sky. So we watched it for a really long time. And then a jet plane, that's like a black plane, not even joking, like flew across the sky and went to go check it out. And then my ex screamed, if that thing flies back on the same course, it's probably then like a military plane. And it did. And then when we looked, it was gone. Like the object was gone. So it was, yeah, it was a, it, we looked, it stayed there for about a good 15, 20 minutes when we were staring at it. And I didn't have my phone and I actually didn't even record it. And I understand when people are looking at things, we're just like, what is that? And to me, I still not sure if it's a UAP. It could have been like, I was laughing where I was like, is it a day comet? Like, he's like, what is that? And I'm like, we had no idea. So it more than likely, it probably wasn't that we know. It was something that we could probably explain. But for sure, to me, that was like something that, especially with a military plane going to look at it as well. So that would have been my closest UFO experience. Yeah.
That's pretty crazy. And yeah. I like the fact that your mindset is so critical. You're not saying it was definitely aliens. No, I like the fact that you second guess yourself, because this, when we see things, right, that we don't know what they are, our imagination can just run wild with it. And you can write a whole book on a sighting, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In your mind. So I think in a sense it's healthy to be skeptical, but also to, in the back of your mind, still have it be a possibility that maybe it's something that we simply cannot explain.
Yeah. And there's so many things. I think like when you have certain experiences and people have certain, you know, certain close encounter experiences that have left marks on their bodies, and you know that their family has been telling this story for a very long time, along with them, these people are very credible as well. Like those things I look at very, very differently, but those only happen to, you know, very select few in the world, right? Even though they're more and more for sure experiencers. But I look at that rather than having a day sighting and being like, oh my God, it's a UFO. Like it might've been for sure. If it was, like, it's amazing. Like, but I think that we have to look at it critically. Like you really do.
Yeah. We do. Blessings 42 day. Thank you so much for the super sticker. Also, your thumbnail is awesome. Your little profile pic is very cool. And, you know, there is a very well-known case among UFO researchers, but not so much with my younger audience. And this is the Falcon Lake incident during a long weekend in May of 1967 in Manitoba. Yeah. And this involved a gentleman by the name of Stan Michalak and his father, who was in the picture right here. This is a very amazing story and one I would expect to see practically on The Twilight Zone, which is the best show of all time.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, involving a downed craft, radiation burns, and so much more. Can you tell us about the story for those that don't know anything about it?
Yeah. So I remember now it's 67, but that's the same time that Chang Harbor happened. So this was all the way in Vancouver Island in British Columbia. So you had two incidences that happened the same year, but on different sides of the coast. One was on the East Coast and one was on the West Coast. This is on the West Coast. And this ended up happening that he was by himself. I believe he was a former pilot 2 years before, I believe. Don't quote me, but I believe he's a former pilot. So he had some credibility in that space of understanding what objects were, like of any form of like flight. So he was by himself. He was walking in this area and he ended up seeing this craft. He saw two crafts in the sky and I believe they were cigarette shaped. And he saw both of them. One landed and one took off. So the one that landed, I believe there's like a lot of different quartz too in that area. So there, and I always hear there's always this conversations with aliens, geez, UFOs and quartz and having quartz field, like, and obviously mm-hmm. Canada is rich of those things. So it landed and then he looked at it for about a half an hour because around this time he was like, okay, it's probably the Soviets, you know, or it's some like American technology. I don't want it, you know, I don't want to mess with it. So he wasn't sure. So I think he was around it for about a half an hour or so looking at it. And then he finally approached it. And then around it, he touched the craft. He said it was metal. He touched it. And then he looked inside. I believe the door opened. It's like so what? Sci-fi, like, I know it's like a crazy story. The door opened and then he looked inside and I believe he said he heard stuff inside and there was lights on the craft as well. But then when the door opened and I believe then he had like a gust of like hot air that came back and burnt him. And then he was puking and vomiting and throwing up when he was like getting back in the forest. Cause obviously, then the thing closed and took off. So it like gusts some kind of like heat at him at some kind of heat or whatever it may be. At that point, they did find radiation in the area too. So maybe it was radiation. And then he ended up taking off. He goes and leaves in the forest. He ends up puking and having major, major effects from it. He goes home. He's in bed. They ended up calling the doctor. And so he had burns on him. And then what you see now is what happened a couple of days later that showed up on his body. And so he said, the son said, Stan's the son who actually wrote a book about this too, and said that remembering there was like the smelling of like sulfur and it was like disgusting, the smell in his room after the incident, and his father was in so much pain. And so then after that, he, the next couple of days that those marks show up. And at that point, then I believe he told his wife, and she said, don't say anything, but he ended up then, you know, talking about it a little more freely. So,
and yeah. You're saying when the son entered the father's room, it smelled like sulfur, like he was emitting the smell of sulfur.
He didn't say it was emitting. It was just in the room. He might've been, but it was in the room. He could smell it. So it might've been, who knows if it was from getting gust of smoke or whatever it was at him, or it was like physically from his body, from the wound. So that's crazy. It also happened the same year. That's the other thing. It happened in like on the other side of the coast. I know it happened like directly on the other sides, like not even a joke. Like BC's here, Nova Scotia's here, like they're on other sides in the same year. So like two massive UFO events. Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. I mean, a good saying that I say, not usually out loud, but to myself, is that there are no such thing as coincidences. I do not believe in coincidences. Everything happens for a reason or for something. And so that's really interesting that both of these things happened in the same year, which is very bizarre. And that story, I think more people need to know about it, especially in the United States, because like you said, it's very sci-fi. Can you just imagine walking and then you just see a magical door open? Of course you're going to enter it without hesitation.
Yeah, we would. And probably after like the debrief and everybody else watching this would. Most people would be screaming and running, I would imagine, you know, but my curiosity. And that's one thing, you know, I'm like, I wonder if I ever got that close, even though how much I love UFOs and like love the topic, if I got that close, that I would freak and maybe run away in pure fear. And it's totally possible, you know,
because you don't know until it happens.
Exactly. And that close of an encounter, like, man. And so, yeah. And then now, like, I believe his son released a book after 50 years of the incident and, you know, still pushing the story forward. And I don't know why we haven't done, you know, CBC's done some documentaries on it, but there hasn't been a lot of Canadian stories in the ethos of the UFO world, unfortunately, just because we don't talk about them as much, even though we have them. So
they're kind of just buried somewhere. For the time being. Edward, thank you for the super sticker. Thank you so much. You're awesome. Now, there is another unusual case, and this is the one that involves those shady men in black in a case involved in a involving a hotel manager by the name of Shane Shova, and in the hotel being in Niagara Falls, in the hotel called Sheraton Falls View Hotel. So they showed up at a hotel after Shane had a UFO sighting. And I'm just going to put up, you know, this photo right here is just a security camera image of the alleged men in black now for all that we can kind of assume that they are. Chrissy, tell me about this specific story. What happened?
I like this because I am, even though I don't really believe in the men in black, I still love the stories. I love them so much. I don't know why. I just find it's just, they're always just so fantastical and sometimes good, sometimes bad, but they always, we know the men in black stories. They show up for like years when there's someone that's seen a UFO or has like been in contact with the UFO.
Right.
So this one is in Niagara Falls in New York. I believe it's like, that's like, if you know Niagara Falls, Canada is on the other side. So here's the thing. I think this is the Canadian Sheraton because there must be two Sheratons. I've never seen the New York Sheraton.
Yeah, it's the one in Ontario.
Okay. So that's not ours. So when I remember reading, I was like, someone said it was New York and I'm like, no, Ontario's Canada. So it was our Sheraton. I'm like, no, that's ours. And I'm like, and Sheraton's like a Canadian company, I believe. Anyway. So long story short, it was in Ontario in the Sheraton. And so the story is that a UFO, someone saw a UFO and then reported it. And then, these two men in black come in, I believe that day, and they're videotaped. From what you're seeing here, walk into the Sheraton and then they grill the receptionist and the people there about what they saw. They saw a UFO and what that UFO was. And then they said, the woman said she was the first woman that talked to them, said that they both looked identical, that she thought that one of them was reading her mind. And then, and I believe, yeah. And then they said that they were like pale white. They just didn't really look human. So I always thought that's a Canadian interesting men in black story because you never hear men in black stories.
No, they're rare. And also it stated the woman at the front desk also said that they didn't have any hair. They had no eyebrows. They had no eyelashes and their skin was just like a white that is just non-human.
Yeah, exactly. And like, who knows? Like, you could have got two guys that came in and know of this story because Men in Black has been a tale for the longest time, or we're like, let's play a trick. Like, it would be the best gag ever, let's be honest. But if not, like, that's pretty wild. And you would think that these people that are working in reception would know the difference between like someone trying to mess with them, but
of course. And this woman didn't.
Yeah. You know, I like to meet her. I like to meet the rest of them and that group to see what they still say to this day. And then obviously get a better look at that security footage.
And so. I definitely recommend people to actually watch the full video because, you know, I'm reading the comments. People are saying, oh, a guy in a suit in the hotel, like what's weird about that? But if you actually look and watch the video, the way they walk, the way that they carry themselves, it's just, it really stands out like a sore thumb. And near the end of the video, there was actually a kid that was watching them walk out of the hotel and he could not take his eyes off these two men. And what we do know about children is that in some respects, they're able to point out things that are a bit more odd than the way adults can. So when a kid's really staring really hard, should probably be looking too.
Yeah, it's fair enough. Yeah, it's just a weird story. And it's one of my favorites because I remember when I came across that, I was like, ooh, like this is a good one. We never get Canadian men in black story.
So, no,
I love that it's like right close to New York too, right? Which is great. So they cross the border to come over. Because they have to be American men in black. They're not Canadian. We never find the Canadian ones.
Well, you can't tell them apart because they all look the same. A while back, I think it's like one of my very first episodes of Mysteries with a History, I did talk about the men in black and talked about this story in particular. So for those people that want to like hear more about it, I recommend watching it because there are some pretty crazy stories when it comes to the men in black. And if you want to believe it or not, it's up to you. But people that have had encounters, they're weird. They're really weird.
Well, didn't Dan Aykroyd have one too? I remember.
He did.
Yeah, Dan ended up saying that he was filming a show and it was about to go to air, and some guy came out of like a black vehicle and was staring at him and like giving him dirty looks, which could have been anybody, Dan Aykroyd. But then he said then after the show, yeah, never went to air, which is interesting because there was tons of UFO related shows at that time too. So there's lots of reasons why they pull stuff off the network, but Dan, and he would know, you know, he's been in Hollywood for so long that he would have an idea of why they did. And if he doesn't know, that always makes me wonder too.
And so. Dan was very, or is very vocal about UFOs until one point. And then he kind of went silent. And a little bit more about that story, which I'm really happy that you brought up, because I talked about it a while back, is he was on the phone with Britney Spears, his UFO documentary.
Oh, was he? I didn't know that.
And the movie that was going to come out was actually about UFOs. Like, that's what he was directing and being a part of.
Yeah.
And the reason to why he thought that these guys were the men in black was, one, their suits, the way they looked, but also when he turned, like, they also came in like a huge black car, but that was kind of outdated. It didn't look like it was from present day. But as he turned around and then came back, within like a second, that car just disappeared. And that's what made him kind of talk out about it, because it was just like a regular car with regular people in suits. Okay, it's not a big deal. But the fact that he stated that within a second or two, this car just disappeared when he wasn't looking, that's why he was thinking these have to be the men in black.
Yeah. That's, yeah. It's like, and I, you know, I'm like, I know that, and I know Dan, I've watched so many interviews with Dan Aykroyd about, I love him so much too. And the one thing, and Dan's Canadian too, which I believe, I'm like, okay. and so, yeah. Woo. Yeah, but with him, I'm like, he loves folklore though. Like, he loves folklore. Like, he knows more UFO stories. I watched his Joe Rogan interview and I was like, wow, like, you know so many UAP stories. It's unbelievable. And you can tell he loves it. So sometimes it's hard too, because when you fall into the world, you're just like, it's consuming, right? Like, it really is. And there's so much folklore and stories around it. And like, some are true, some are not, but like, they're all really fantastical. Like, it's, you know, my sci-fi brain side is just like, loves it like so much. And then I have to like get my analytical brain in there to be like, hey, like, you can't, you know, you can't like follow everything.
You got the right hemisphere and the left hemisphere kind of like fighting against each other.
Yeah. Yeah. So I like the Men in Black story, even though I'm like, I'm like, but I love it. And like, I still love it.
It's insane. And I'm telling you, these people that encounter them is unbelievable. And right now, well, not right now, but we're looking at a report, you know, one among many, that talk about sightings in the last couple of years, about the spike in UFO sightings, and possibly due to more people at home because of the pandemic, just like how you had stated. And I know that the Manitoba is one of the locations. What about other cities or areas around Canada that you could kind of call a current hotspot?
Yeah. So BC is one of them. Lots of people in the UFO community that are like researchers are from Winnipeg, which I find interesting, but there is sightings in that area as well. Yeah. But majority that have been reported, and also like, there's been a spike since like, I believe like 2012 to now, there's like, it's increased immensely. So you've had a major spike since 2012 till current. I think in 2012, they had like 2000 UFO sightings, and then it's been around like 1200 and around, I think, just last year. So majority of UFO sightings are in BC, Ontario, and Quebec that we see. They say a stat I read that was Toronto has the most UFO sightings, but I'm going to kind of go with Vancouver on that one, to be honest, from what I've heard from stories. But they say that Toronto has the most. It is the biggest city in Canada, so it has the most people as well. So it makes sense that if people are filming stuff, they'd see it. But I'm probably going to say BC. BC is a hot spot. Kind of makes sense too. It's on the coast of, you know, looking at Los Angeles, Catalina Island. Same kind of concept. Yeah, a little more northern though, but still same line, same coastline.
And these other hot spots that you mentioned, in your opinion, why do you think they're hot spots? What do they have that maybe other parts of Canada don't possess?
That's great. So BC, I'm just going to say coastline. Who knows, you know, at this point of why, but there's tons of people that have, but there might be something there on the coastline that is exactly like Catalina Island, that it's a hot spot. Ontario, I'm going to say because of the copious amounts of people that live in this province that are having cell phones and everything else. Also, Ottawa has a lot, which is in Ontario, and it's our capital of Canada. It's not Toronto. If everybody thinks that, it's not. It's Ottawa. But Ottawa has a military base, and there was it was called oh my gosh, what is his last name now? It was the Gardner. There was the Gardner incident that happened there that they thought it was a, and I can talk a little bit about it more too, but
yeah, Ottawa, tell the story.
Yeah. So Ottawa had this one incident that this man was like whistleblowing. Apparently he didn't work internally, but he was trying to whistleblow, and he called himself the Gardner, and he was advocating for UFOs. And I believe it's 91. I have to double check, but I think it was 91. And he was advocating for UFOs, but they didn't know who he was. So he would just made up this alias, and he was like sending in, you know, documents, kind of like Black Vault stuff. Yeah. Yeah. And he was sending it to the media and to government and like trying to get people like aware, mainly the media. So what happened was, is this guy named the Gardner, there is an incident that Unsolved Mysteries picked up. So the Gardner guy got
I think it's called the Guardian case. Not the
sorry,
Gardner.
The Guardian. Thank you.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
Guardian.
Yeah.
Names. No, the Guardian. Okay. Yeah. The Guardian. And so he ended up calling Unsolved Mysteries. And at that point, then they created a segment, came down to Ottawa. And then the video that he ended up releasing was a VHS tape that ended up having like a UFO and then like four flares around it, apparently. And so at this point though, there's a lot of mixed stories about this, because in that region, I believe it was called, Cape, I believe, or Carp. And in that region of Ottawa, Carp. Right, which is in that region of Ottawa, ends up having tons of UFO sightings though around the same year. So it was like year after year, people having similar experiences. So this kind of alias guy that would send this information in, there was other people that were kind of backing his conversation. So one woman that was, later on, we found out that she did say that she saw military that same night when that incident apparently happened with the UFO and those flares, that she did see military coming down her road because she was in her backyard was that incident. So, yeah, and she was like a UFO enthusiast as well. And then you've had other people where, you know, I think it was a previously a day earlier, it was a little girl that ended up seeing like a massive light that went into her room that filled it up. And then she went to the window and then it just disappeared. So there's been, and then there's also like other UFO sightings where, you know, a touchdown of a UFO apparently happened in that area. And then another group of people saw a whole bunch of military people running towards the site. So there's been like that area in Ottawa has had so much activity. But the reason why I say that is to get to like what we're originally saying is there's a military base there, a Canadian military base where they used to be. Now it's deactivated, I think, since 94. So they just decided to then the UFO, you know, activity and CARP started to slow down. So after that time, so people were correlating it together, being like, this base is here. You know, it's a little bit, not everybody knows about it. We know that there is a military activity around us. It's Ottawa. So yeah. And then after that, we haven't really heard much since then, since the base really isn't active. Crazy.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. But
I know.
Honestly, this whole world is crazy. Uh-huh. You hear sightings from every country, but they're just not really talked about too much, at least yet. A little earlier, you mentioned, you know, your father playing a big part in you having interest. And you also said that your father had a sighting at some point in his life and took a picture of it. Did any of your other family members have a sighting as well, by any chance? Question.
No, never. Never. My sister's not into UFOs. You know, she would make fun of my dad, and I would talk about Paul Heller when he would come forward, and my sister would just make fun of us. Same with my mom. So my mom, like my parents, they're not into it. Like they're just not. Like I think my sister is a little bit more. She's more intrigued now, and my mom not so much. But it's really just been my father and I in the UFO world. Yeah. You know, teach their own. You know, some people don't enjoy that subject or want to know. Some people just don't even care to know. And I don't blame them sometimes in that, you know, like it's to whatever it floats their boat, I guess. But no, not that I know of. It's only ever been my father and I, but mainly my father. Like mine is, you know, hit or miss depending on what it was. But my dad, yeah, my dad, like he, and a lot of people I've talked about it, and I've also mentioned like he kind of updates me, because the last time I went home, I was like, am I missing parts of your story? Because like, I need to tell it right. And I want him to tell it, but he doesn't want to tell it publicly, and that's fine. But he said, he's just like, yeah, he's like, Chrissy, he's like, you forgot like the most important part. I'm like, what's that? I'm like, you've told me the story when I was younger, and like, we've talked about it. He's like, we flashed the car lights at it, and the thing flashed back. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, Dad. I'm like, how did I forget that? I'm like, geez. So like, he's, you know, and he was with a group of people. They were in a full car, you know? So it's, you know, they don't really talk to each other anymore, but I said to my dad, I'd love to get you guys together to talk about it. But he's just like, I don't want anyone to know who I am in that way. And I, you know, his anonymity, I have to respect. Right. So.
Of course, you can't force anyone to do things that they simply don't want to do, but yeah, you can still carry the story with his permission, which obviously he has given you, to go ahead and share it to others. Jamie has a question, and thank you, by the way. It says, Chris, you stated that you knew Paul Heller. Yeah. Do you know why he took such a stance on his belief in ETs?
Yeah, from what I know from Victor Vigiani, so when I met Victor, the story from what I know with Paul is that another ufologist sent him the material, and it was sent him the book the day after Roswell, and Paul was on vacation. And for years, Paul didn't read it. He was just like, forget it. And then one day he was on vacation, and I believe he was poolside. And then Paul decided to read the book. And then that's what changed his mind, where he was like, there's something going on here. And so the one thing about Paul Heller that a lot of people don't know is that Paul might have been, during the time where Trudeau was running and was our prime minister at that time, he ended up, which now we do have, you know, Justin Trudeau, his son, is our prime minister. But before that, Pierre Trudeau was running. He actually ran against Pierre Trudeau. So Paul Heller was almost the prime minister of Canada. Sorry, it's my dog there. Which is crazy and amazing at the same time. So Paul read that book, and then after that, he started to dive in, and people were sending him more information. And then he met Victor Vigiani, and Victor Vigiani's been a ufologist in Canada for years. Like, this man knows everybody. I've been on a conference call with him with like 40 people from around the world of ufology. And earlier, I believe Victor had a radio show too around ufology and Canada. And so he then sent more information and connected with Paul Hilliard. And then Victor was really the PR person that pushed that story forward into the public about him being the former Minister of Defense, believing that, you know, he believed more in the extraterrestrial conversation too, but also the UFO. But Paul Hilliard spoke about many things. He spoke about the cabal. He spoke about tons of different stuff related into like money and economy. So very, very smart man. He wrote multiple books. He wrote one book before, another book before he died too. So I was just fortunate. You know, there's only so much that of things that you can believe and you have to look into, but Paul is an amazing man, and he's a good person, and he did really care a lot about the subject and tried his best. That's for sure.
And another well-known Canadian UFO researcher is Christopher Rukowski. Have you ever collaborated with him on researching any UFO cases?
I would love to. I've never met him yet. He's in Winnipeg with MJ. Yeah, he lives in Winnipeg too. So I've never met him yet. I've heard him do multiple interviews. You know, he has books as well that he's co-authored with people and himself. So I haven't met Chris, but one day I'd love to do more stuff with him. You know, I'm like, I believe we're friends on LinkedIn and I believe Twitter, but I haven't yet collaborated with him. And I honestly would love to. Like, he has all the files. Like, he is the one most notable ufologist in Canada, because they were giving him all the files for the longest period of time.
Who's they?
I believe that, I forget if it wasn't the Canadian government, but there was one chapter that was researching UFOs, and I believe they might have stopped doing it, and instead he decided to take those files and keep it going. So they just ended up reporting to him consistently. So he has all of the Canadian sightings. He has all the data. So all the data I know comes from Chris, and that we know of. Yeah. Because he's actually like looked at it, analyzed it. So yeah, he has all the Canadian information.
And all that information that he has, is it all public?
From what I know, probably not. No. I would say that some of it isn't. I don't know, so don't quote me, but I would imagine that some of it's not. I don't know if he knows of anything government related, but he does have, he's kind of like the Canadian MUFON, even though we do have MUFON here. He is the, you know, he has all of the majority of the cases that we know of. So maybe one day, I hope.
And a little bit earlier, you just mentioned MJ, and someone asked, who is MJ? Do you
want to? So MJ Banias is our editor-in-chief at The Debrief. He also has written a book about the culture of UFO, like, of UFO community. Like, he's written about that. He's written tons of other articles about UFOs as well, too. An amazing editor-in-chief and friend, and like a great, great Canadian like asset to like what we're doing, too. And MJ's more of a skeptic, too, which I really love about him. Is that that's the part where he'll look at this story, but he also has a different lens to it, which is really important to have. So,
and I believe that's for everyone that writes for The Debrief, those yeah. that believe in UFOs and those that don't, regardless. The articles that are written are very scientific in their standpoint versus his kind mm-hmm. of beliefs. I mean, most of the articles that I've read on The Debrief, everyone does their research and they actually yeah. interview those that specialize in the topic that is being covered for the article. So, and MJ is obviously one of them, mm-hmm. who is the editor and chief for The Debrief.
Yeah. And like MJ's written for the Globe and Mail. He's written for Popular Mechanics. Like before he started The Debrief, same with Tim McMillan, they all wrote for, you know, all investigative journalists wrote for like some really amazing mainstream outlets. So it kind of made sense. They come together and they make a really great, really great news site.
Oh, absolutely. I love it. It's yeah, awesome. And it's come a long way in just a year.
Seriously, it has. Yeah. And like more good stuff to come in the next little bit. You know, it takes like a whole family and a team to do that stuff. Like it's a lot of work. But, you know, the one thing I love about The Debrief is like everybody, like there is this, like there's a family community, even though everybody's busy in their own time, but people care. And like all of us like UFOs. So we like the topic. We also like other topics. That's why we talk about them, but there is like a commonality. So, and I also learn a lot from them. Like, you know, as someone who works as doing more interviewing, but also then as mainly a publicist, I learn a lot from them and just watching them too and learn from them that way, which I really respect. Yeah.
And that's how it should be for anything that you work with or work for, learning their best attributes, especially. Yeah. Are you familiar with the 2014 Kennington on Prince Edward's Islands of UFO sighting?
I don't know that one. No, I know that there's like, we've had multiple ones that there's like, I think there's like at least 15 to 16 cases from what I know, but there's more of that. I think there's more of them as well. Is this the one with, no, it wouldn't have been. Sorry. Never mind. You go. You tell me.
So yeah, just a really brief story. It's, you know, while putting out a bonfire late in the evening of June 4th, 2014, John Shepherd witnessed unusual lights in the sky over the Gulf of St. Lawrence and captured 22 minutes of it on his cell phone. Okay. We need to call, we need to call everyone and let them know this. But after reporting the incident to MUFON and their investigation concluded it being a confirmed sighting. So CBC covered the event, and the next day CBC released a follow-up article in which a series of alternate explanations for the event were presented as well. So that was pretty crazy.
Yeah, CBC has been really good at reporting UFO related and also making documentaries. CBC is our Canadian broadcaster. It's technically owned by the government. The way like you have NPR and whatnot, we have CBC. So yeah, they do a pretty good job. It's once in a while they'll always come out with UFO stuff, but I'm like, I appreciate it. I respect it.
I'll take what I can get.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. The one thing though, I think that's cool that not everybody knows, I believe it's St. Paul's in Alberta. We have like a UFO landing pad. We have like, yeah, it's like, it's like, yeah, they did it because I believe that they said the community wanted to show like openness and acceptance, which is like really great. And like saying like, hey, so they created this like landing pad in St. Paul and I believe it's still there. Yeah. Which is really cool. I actually haven't seen it yet. I'd love to see it, to be honest, but it's pretty big. Like it looks great. It's not just like some kind of like strip of concrete. Like it's a the full, like Google it, like Google St. Paul's, like Alberta. And you'll be like, this is really nice. This is like,
well, I'm going to look
at it.
You
did a good job. Yeah.
I'm going to look at it. Yeah. Also, CVT is also really good at UFO coverage and even Bigfoot coverage as well. Have you heard of that? CTV?
Oh yeah, gosh. CTV. I don't know as much. Yeah, CTV is like it's not government based. It's obviously privatized. But CTV is like one of our major like monopolies here that covers TV. So for them, yeah, I'm surprised they probably do a lot more in BC, I would say, with CTV and Bigfoot, because I haven't seen a lot of the Bigfoot conversation on our news. I've seen more UAP. Actually, I don't even think I've ever seen a Bigfoot story on the news, but I wouldn't be surprised if CTV Vancouver was talking about it, to be honest. Yeah.
I've heard quite a few stories when it comes to Bigfoots in, being in Canada, because, you know, a lot of it's still unpopulated by humanity. So it seems like they have Bigfoots have a lot of place to roam.
Yeah. They do. And there's some like BC has like, again, like it was Vancouver Island. There's Grange Taylor is another one where he like, this story is like one of my favorites too, where he's like, they call him Spaceman, but he literally said that he wrote a letter and that he was abducted by aliens, and that they were going to take him and they were telling him how to build a spaceship. Yeah. Okay. So yeah. And so he built a spaceship. So when he was a kid too, I believe they built some kind of craft that they would live in. And he said that he was talking to ETs through like his radio, and they were telling him how to build this spacecraft. Yeah. It's a very far out story, but there's also a lot of conversations. Again, when you dive deep into him, you know, he was a little bit of a recluse, a little bit like he still had friends. But at the same time, they weren't sure if he was later on in his life, if he was doing drugs. Some people were saying no, some people were saying yes, but everyone consistently said throughout the town that he was just like super smart, like he was a genius and like very, very bright. And he then wrote this letter that said that that apparently one day he'll come back too. That's what they say. And so his parents and stuff are still waiting. And I'm like, it breaks my heart. I know. I'm like, and the whole community, like really, like they knew him and they liked him. He was a recluse himself. It wasn't like they were, you know, pinpointing him or casting him aside, but he ended up then like, you know, they ended up saying like, we actually believe him. A lot of the community believed that, yeah, he left on a spaceship and then he's going to come back. Yeah, it's great. Lots of stuff going on in BC apparently. But yeah, his story is like, it breaks my heart a little bit. And it's also like, it's saddening, but it's also, you know, you just hope, I hope aliens picked him up instead of the other scenario that might've happened. So yeah.
If it was the later, that'd be kind of awesome. The fact that he was taken by aliens, if that's a true story. Red Panda Koala asks, and thank you. Also, you killed it on the UCR interview. Awesome stuff, my friend. It says, who are the top five Canadian UFO researchers?
That's good. I would say MJ Benias for sure is one. I'm like, how am I going to leave MJ out? Chris Radetzky, number one. I would have said Paul Hellyer at that time. And then along with Victor Vigiani. And then I believe, I forget Stan's last name, that is part of MUFON as well. He is the Canadian founder of MUFON. I would say him as well. But there's a fair amount too. There's some people that have like UAP studies, like Jason is a great ufologist. And he's out in Vancouver. So there's more. And to be honest, everyone keeps coming out of the woodwork sometimes where I'm like, oh, like, you know, like I didn't know that you're in Canada. I had no idea. It's great. You know, it's fine. But how many females? I'm like, please, somebody, like other women, come. You know, it can't just be a couple of us, you know, in general in the UFO community, which I know they're populating more and we see them on UFO Twitter, but I don't see any females that I know of in Canada. So we need
more. At least not yet. You got yourself.
Yeah. I know there's more. They're just not talking. I'm like, come on. I'm like, I know you want to talk.
Right. We're going to be right back.
Hi, I'm Micah Hanks, and let me tell you something. I support Christina Gomez as a Patreon subscriber, and here's why you should too. She brings all of her unique insights to a whole new generation, and all while she's also going through college. Listen, support Christina, become a Patreon subscriber today. You won't regret it.
Chrissy, I have one last question for you for tonight, and the question is, What are you working on, and what can we expect to see from you and the debrief over the next few months?
Sure. Right now, obviously, it's if you know my show, Rebelliously Curious. So I'm working on that, building that. It's like a passion and a love. And then also, yeah, developing new podcasts with my friend Marie Nicola and just doing Alt Pop Repeat. So more just good stuff with the debrief, hopefully building. Hopefully we'll all get to go to conferences a little bit more in person next year. Yeah. And I have to do say Falcon Lake was actually Manitoba. I think I said Vancouver on that one. So it was just to double check. Right. I just realized I was like, I don't want to give misinformation. You know, that's like the hard. Seriously, right? Like you
don't want to be like, a Richard Doty.
I'm human. I'm right. Nice. For me, even everybody makes mistakes. So I was just like, I'll just clear it up just to make sure. Falcon Lake was Manitoba in 1967. Yeah.
Well, that is all the time we have for today. For my Patreon supporters, we will be doing an extra 15-minute Q&A with Christy Newton, which I'll be posting on the Patreon site tonight. I want to thank everyone for joining me here and Chrissy and I here today. Thanks for the lively chat. Thank you for all the questions you had, all the super chats. You guys are all awesome. And I just want to say again to Chrissy, thank you so much for coming on to the show. And Chrissy, can you please just take a moment? Oh, I just hear thunder. Sorry.
Okay.
Aliens? No, it's just thunder. Can you just take a moment to tell us where we can find you on social media?
Yeah, for sure. You can go to at Chrissy Newton. At Ms. Vocab. You can go to Chrissy Newton on Facebook, or you can just Google Chrissy Newton. You can find me, but at Ms. Vocab, MissVocab. So down there in the little side over there this way. Yeah, that way. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that is it for today's show. And remember, keep your eyes on the skies.